Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your guest host today, Rich Palatini. I'm Director of Brand Strategy and Creative at D'Elia Associates, and this just isn't any episode. It's our 50th. Now, to mark this milestone, we're going to flip the script, so to speak, and instead of interviewing a guest as we usually do today, I'll be interviewing the regular host of our show, Ed D'Elia. Now, quick bio on Ed. He's the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, and we're a branding and marketing firm that's helped countless B2B companies grow and thrive. And over the past 50 episodes, Ed's spoken with leaders from multi-generational and family businesses across a wide range of industries. He's talked about their explorations of challenges and the opportunities they face. But today, we get to hear directly from Ed. Now, we hear about not only his story, but we'll also learn about what he's experienced and his knowledge base that he's increased on the other side of the microphone for nearly 4 years of conversation. So with that being said, Ed, welcome to your own show.
Thank you so much, Rich. It's great to be on the other side of this program today.
Good. So let's start with your story. That's much like you do when you interview and talk with people and have that conversation. So tell us a little bit about, you know, your journey coming to D'Elia Associates and what it was like stepping into a business that was founded by your father. I guess that was back in 1964 or 65.
1964. Yes, that's correct. So I grew up around the business. I was influenced at a very young age. I think my first task was around the age of 7 years old. My dad said, I need you to help me collate some press kits at the office. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to do that. And he said, how about if I buy you a Star Wars figure after? And I'm like, okay, that'll do it. So I was cheap labor back in the day. And
so that was like your first paycheck, wasn't it?
There you go. More or less. Yeah. Yeah. Just pay me in Star Wars toys and we're good. And then as I got older, it was just a part of our life. Business was around and I would go in and I would do other things. I helped my brother sometimes, who worked in the business for a number of years, on photo shoots, setting up trade booths, another preparing for trade shows for clients. I got to go to some pretty cool venues as a tag along with my dad and sometimes my mom. But all the while, I had no real inclinations to join the family business. I'm the youngest by 10 years, so I watched my sister and my brothers go through the family business experience, if you will. And my sister probably stuck around the longest. My brothers did a turn in and out and found that it was better for dad just to be dad and not dad and boss. Needless to say, as I was coming out of college, I was in a good relationship space with my dad. And I had a job lined up outside of Philadelphia. And I was all set to cut my teeth in business development. And then he and I had this heart to heart. And he said, give some thought, come into the business. I'll show you what you don't know. You buy me out, we'll do a long-term buyout, but decide by this weekend because I've got three or four people in line to buy it if you don't want it.
No pressure. Huh?
Needless to say, I took a weekend to think about it and said, I'm 22 years old. And if I pass on this, I'm about to pass up on business leadership and I'd be passing up on a rather unique experience and opportunity. So I better give this a try. So that was that. And then August of 1995, I think, was my first full-time day at D'Elia Associates.
Okay. So you touched on and you mentioned a important word earlier, and that was leadership. And today, obviously, you're at the rudder, so to speak, of the D'Elia ship. So what were some of the lessons that you learned early on from your father and some of the challenges that you experienced and how you overcame those, both as an organization and personally, for that matter, that kind of shaped you as that leader of the Lee Associates that continues to grow and be successful these days. What kind of leadership things did you learn?
I would say with my dad, there were positive attributes and not so positive attributes that I learned or inherited. As many guests on this program have had the opportunity to, before they take the steps into the family business, they go out and they have a different career for a period of time and then they come back. I never really had that opportunity because it was either come in and buy it or I'm selling it and decide over the weekend. So,
Sure.
as much as I wish I had an opportunity to work someplace else, I never really had that choice. I had to make a decision and I did. So, needless to say, my only real exposure to leadership was my dad. And on the plus side, I don't know that I've ever met a greater brand ambassador of the Lee Associates. He was just tremendous. The love his clients had for him was evident. And he would maintain and nurture relationships like no other. Needless to say, a number of former clients came to his funeral when they had been retired themselves for many years, but they just, his clients didn't like them, they loved them. And he was awesome at that. Not so good on the personnel side. He was very demanding. He was very much a top-down leader. He expected the best and expected a high work ethic. What also I think I imparted from him was a demand for the highest quality. I remember back in the day, a couple of cartloads of brochures came in. And Rich, I'm sure you remember the times when you don't really know what you're going to get till you open the box. It's not like
Yes.
today. And he opened the box and didn't like the quality. And he threw them all out. He said, no, we're going to do them again. And I was like, wow, you're going to throw all that away? He said, yeah. It's wrong. We can't send that to the client. You know, that's a reflection of us and our qualities. Early on, I got that imprinted in my DNA. It's like if it's not done to a high level of quality and a high level of detail, it's not worthy of existing. Very much highly attentive to detail, a high stickler for quality, and a great ambassador and a great, not just an advisor, but a great friend to the clients he served.
So your father really was running that family business. We call it a family business, really much, pretty much all by himself, especially with when it's his name and certainly your name now on the door, and you're the one running the show. Things are very different these days, but in many ways they're still the same. So maybe draw on some similarities or differences in the kinds of opportunities that existed then and now, and maybe some of the challenges that you face and maybe some of the things that you learned that help you deal with those things.
Yeah. So around the time that I joined, I think we had just been coming off of maybe 20 years or so where DeLea Associates, I'll say its primary clientele, were industry associations, predominantly overseas, of large trade conferences and trade fairs, Plastics Association, the Fine Jewelry Association, Confectionery Association, and entities of that were our clients and our primary role in servicing them were to help them attract U.S. business and industry to their overseas trade shows and their overseas organizations, because they wanted to conduct business with U.S. companies. So DeLea Associates was functioning as very much like this U.S. agent of all these trade shows and doing the marketing and promotion, and in many instances, really helping these companies get their goods and wares and exhibits and everything else to different destinations in Europe predominantly. Back in the day, it wasn't as easy as it is today. If you say, I'm going to, in the 1980s, yeah, we're going to go exhibit at this trade show in Germany, that was a big deal. By today's standards, it doesn't seem that big of a deal. And the lines of communication were fairly fixed. If you wanted to reach an audience, as a B2B firm, which we were then and we are now, you would do it through trade shows, you would do it through trade media, you would do it through PR. And to some extent, direct mail, as there was no real email back then, there were no websites back then. Fast forward to today, such a fragmentation of media, that's just nothing compared to all the different channels of communication we have today through social media, digital channels, and now AI.
Yeah, it seems like there's almost too many opportunities, and how do you choose and how do you pick?
Yeah, that's become more of the challenge. Whereas back then it was more like, how do we execute with excellence through the existing channels? Because those were fairly fixed. With B2B marketing, out of home and TV and broadcast were not really relevant to the average B2B client because they were targeting a very specific professional buyer. They weren't really targeting the masses. So the channels were a little bit more narrow and fixed. And then it was really about how do we communicate with excellence through those channels and reach the audiences in the best possible way.
Yeah, and it seems like today, and one of the things that obviously that the Lee Associates were able to do is we're able to be able to customize for clients' needs. Like you said, back then you had three or four major channels and you said that's basically it. Where nowadays we can do everything, like you said, from broadcast through social media and everything in between. So that is obviously an opportunity, but a challenge in itself. But we seem to be doing pretty good. So that's a positive thing, positive thing. And here we are. We think about it. Here we are talking, and it's the 50th episode. So let's talk less about you now and the 50 people that have gone before in this podcast. And let's think about how things got started. Tell us a little bit about what really inspired you to start this in the first place. Because as far as I know, there's no other podcasts about B2B family businesses, right?
No, there isn't. And that was one of the pieces of rationale for starting this podcast. But what occurred to me, it was probably about a year ago or so, is I said, if I really looked at my best relationships, closest relationships in business, what's the common thread? And I was reading the tea leaves and I said, okay, there's a family business, husband, wife, team, two brothers in business, second generation, fourth generation, fifth generation. Two cousins working together, five family members in the business. And then it slowly occurred to me that, well, wait a minute, I'm a second generation. They're all multi-generation or family businesses. So we have this inherent kinship and understanding of what that means. And as I reflected on it, it's a little different than, say, a startup enterprise. They have their own unique challenges and their own unique struggles. As a second gen or a third or a fourth, and on the program, we've even interviewed a seventh generation, if you can believe that. We have different struggles and different challenges, equally of the same magnitude and impact, but different. And as I reflected on that, I said, let me see what's out there. And yeah, there's a couple of programs about family business, but none quite like this, none that really focus on the B2B family business experience as ours does. So I said, wow, an underserved audience. And I bet there's a lot of interesting stories. And I can honestly attest to the fact that after 50 episodes, yes, there are. Yes, there
Okay.
are some amazing stories of perseverance, of overcoming adversity, of finding that fine balance between family and business, and so much more.
Well, you just answered my next question that'll come up, and I was going to ask you about with those leaders that you've talked to, the idea of themes or general takeaways, and you've pretty well outlined that. Anything else you can think of?
It would seem that, and it was very interesting, in some cases, or in many cases, that next generation would go off and work somewhere else. In some of the instances, Rich, that was actually a requirement. So the previous generation, like, if you're going to work here, you have to go work somewhere else first. And then, based on that experience, if you still want to come back here, we'll talk about an opportunity. But that was a mandatory. And so you didn't just slide into the family business. The other interesting point, which mirrors my own experiences, many of them, those that were multi-gens that were very successful, they started very young. They got early influence to the business. They understood what mom or dad or whomever that family member was doing at a very young age. And what was notable is that we all, either directly or indirectly or even subconsciously, had that influence across our formative years and then beyond that sort of shaped our sensibilities of what that business meant and what it meant to the family.
So it sounds like two of the key things are for family members, get a real world experience in business outside the family business. And number two, get them in early so they have an organic understanding of the business without feeling like they're P&L oriented or they're responsible for a certain type of operation within the business. I guess that is that pretty well sum things up.
Yeah. Yeah, and not every single scenario was it preordained. One of my early guests said, "Yeah, I was on a totally different career path. I didn't want that." And then he goes, "My dad came to me and said, if you want to buy it, you can. Otherwise, I'm selling it." And he's, "Whoa, wait a minute. Don't sell it. Let's talk about that." And I was thinking, "Wow, that sounds eerily familiar."
Yeah, that's true. That's true. One of the themes that we were talking about before we got together to talk as we are now is that one of the other things we talked about, this idea of family dynamics in a business, because unlike a regular business where everybody goes home to their own families, you're going home to the same family, so to speak. So what kind of themes or perspectives have come up with the people that you've interviewed?
So I've heard a lot of different sides of this one, and it's a good question. In some families, it would seem that the lines of business and family are very blurred. It's very organic. So it's perfectly acceptable in the middle of a family dinner to start talking business. In other scenarios, it's tolerated to a point. If it's okay, bring it up, but if you're going to dominate the conversation, take it outside. In my particular case, I found that I had to be a little bit more deliberate with my dad and say, listen, when we're at a family gathering or whatever, let's not talk about the office. Unless it's a burn-in fire, which it probably isn't, I bet we can address it on Monday at the office. And he grumbled at first over that, but then eventually he's accepted it. And that way, when we were on family time, we could enjoy family. And when we're in the office, we're going to focus on business and we're not going to get the two muddied up. So I was very, I think, coming along 10 years later than my siblings, probably very sensitized to the fact that my brothers didn't have the greatest experience working for my dad. And I'm like, okay, what are some things that I can do different? And I recalled that, yeah, a lot of times they'd bring work home and be bringing the discussion either to the dinner table or to an event or a family gathering. And I wanted to do it a little different. And I think that helped preserve both camps, if you will.
That's a good thinking, because nowadays, let's face it, everything is 24/7, but you can burn out. You say, I'm tired of this, or you start to have relationships that are unhealthy. And like you said, by separating them, you get that little bit of breathing room, and everybody certainly appreciates it. And look, people need to do that in regular life, but in family, it's even more important these days. But at the Lee Associates here, where we're working and talking about, there's two things that we do, obviously, is brand development, which is critical, and then a growth strategy that we have as a family-owned business. So those two things are central to our success. And obviously, that's how we look at brands. And like you said, we've done it for first generation all the way. And yesterday, right, we were talking to a sixth generation family and working with them. But the idea of that brand and growth strategy for companies that are not, let's say, brand and marketing related, that can be a challenging thing, because obviously they can do what they do great, whether it's manufacturing, whether it's business, whether it's snow removal, whatever it might be. Let's think about that for a second and think about and take it from your perspective. So talk about the idea of how important brand is for a family-owned business that want to scale, because in their minds, as a family business, they're obviously very proud of what they've done, and rightfully so, because as a family, they've achieved these things. As a family, we always have goals. But in business, they're even bigger, and because of the economics involved, they're even more important and have great impact. So talk a little bit about this idea of brand, because we do a lot of important groundwork with them, understanding how to connect with companies that aren't necessarily family-owned. So there isn't that synergy, if you will. So talk about the idea of the importance of brand, if you will.
I think brand can be a real, and we've seen it many times, a real game changer for specifically the family business organization or a family governed organization. Because oftentimes what we'll find and be able to do is leverage that family legacy that if you go industry to industry, there's a bit of a halo effect. When you say it's a fifth generation business or sixth generation business, there's that feeling of assuredness that this company has endured the test of time many times over, has seen multiple generations of leadership, people at the helm, taking it forward and continuing to take it forward, almost an unstoppable force, it would seem. So when you hitch that up to some points of differentiation and distinction in the marketplace, you have a real true powder keg of opportunity to really cast some real distinct light on that organization and that corporate brand. A lot of times for companies that I'll speak with, it's also getting an understanding of what they want out of the business, what that family wants. In some cases, they want, and there's no criticism or discredit, they want a lifestyle organization. Okay. Different level of engagement, different level of growth priority. It's going to be more of a slow, sustained, smart growth approach, slow and steady, if you will. Others aspire to be more of an enterprise. So they understand and acknowledge their family roots, but they're saying, we want to be bigger. We want to be something more. So that instance, we might approach with a little more aggressiveness and say, okay, if that's what you want, here's how you have to go to market to create that scale and that growth. And here's how you have to position that brand commensurate with not where you are today, but where you want to end up.
Yeah.
So it's really just, and sometimes they themselves don't fully understand the implications or the differences between being a lifestyle business versus an enterprise. Some important conversations early on to help sort that out. And then we can be commensurate with how we would recommend from a growth strategy standpoint, from a brand strategy standpoint, the best way forward.
Yeah. When we often talk to family-owned businesses about the idea of brand, sometimes I think we're talking as brand psychologists, because when we talk to brands, families, they have different ideas about how the brand that is their business should be portrayed. And so one of the things I know I find very rewarding, and I know you do too, is being able to go in and to resolve those differences. And resolve those differences doesn't necessarily mean that there's a schism or big problems, but it makes them much more efficient working as a family to make decisions, not only in what we do for them and the way that they market, but also in their own business so that they can be more organized, more efficient in the way that they do their internal. So I think that's part of also what I find to be most rewarding when we work with these family businesses, is because, like I said before, they're great at what they do, but marketing and understanding how to properly and most efficiently acquire prospects is a thing that was very, like I said, very rewarding for them. I think between those two things, when you understand brand and you understand how growth is aligned to it, it makes a huge difference. And I think younger people these days, because they're so attuned to the culture and online social spaces, understand relationships like that more. And as they come into the business, we're talking about people who've been there and all those things, but if you're talking about somebody, like you said, you were what, 22 when you joined. So a 22-year-old now compared to when you joined versus when your father started the business is light years away. So yes. Let's talk about and maybe offer some thinking and some guidance and some wisdom about a next generation or that younger, maybe somebody who's going into college, just got out of college, maybe going into a separate business, about joining the family business or pursuing another path. What are the kind of things? Because you even mentioned you're one of three siblings. You made that choice. They didn't. And maybe give some perspective and offer some wisdom on that subject.
Sure. I think that, and I'm one of four. So
oh, four. Brothers, sorry, two. Didn't mean to cut that last one off.
And if I looked at my siblings, if I looked at other scenarios, I think sometimes the next generation will step in out of duty, out of a sense of obligation to the family. Sometimes that duty and obligation is heavy-handed. So this is what we do in this family. We work here. That's mm-hmm. what you're expected to do.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's implied. Sometimes it's as simple as, can you come in and help with this one thing? And then you look up and 10 years have passed. So I would say the difference, or I'd say a heavy, important factor in that decision-making, do I take a different path or do I take the path of the family businesses? Do you have a vision for what you would bring to that business? As you mentioned at the start, our focus as an organization is B2B brand and growth, B2B brand and growth strategy. That's our core focus. That was not our core focus when my dad's era during his regime. They were very much a traditional B2B advertising and PR firm. So brand was not really in the conversation, in the consideration set, only in a very ancillary way. And As I came into the business, I had really started to develop a very keen passion, really, for this idea of the art and science of brand building. And as I looked at the landscape, specifically in the B2B landscape, there seemed to be a gap there. There seemed to be a missing piece of knowledge or a missing piece of the puzzle. And I found that strange because brand is the most valued and valuable asset of an organization, and it was being overlooked. What was even further puzzling is I came in around 1995, we were just starting to see the commercialization of the web. So the first websites were coming into being around that time, a little before, but in terms of commercialization and companies having websites, that was becoming more common. And I really scratched my head. I said, why does this company look one way offline in their marketing communications materials and how they go to a trade show? And then they look completely different online. So I'm like, they're almost doing like a brand makeover just because they have a website. Isn't that strange? Why are they doing that? Why are they changing who they are just because they have a website now or a web presence? So that's really where the wheels started turning and where now our core, patented process, the brand leadership solution, was born. So I wonder if there's a system, a way that we can create a systematic method to help these companies achieve that brand clarity and uniformity and create distinction in the marketplace across all channels. Getting back to your question, it's really if you, as that young person, have a vision for what you can do in that role, then my advice is go for it.
Good, good. The interesting thing about what you're saying is, particularly, is this idea of have the passion for brand because that's the differentiation. And as we know, yesterday we were talking to a company that is sixth generation, but in terms of marketing and putting together a couple of companies together, they have to understand that they have to even evolve as their own brand that's been around for over 100 years to do those things. So the challenge never stops. The challenge always is then how do you stay current and talk to the audience to let them know that there's a legacy, there's a partnership, and there's a future together. And I think, like you said, when people understand that type of thing, it's not for everybody. Obviously, for you and for so many other people that we work with, not everybody, but
And the
they
reason I
benefit.
think that was a great point, Rich, because when you're stepping in as the next generation, doing it a little better than my mom or dad is not a strategy because everything has changed, right? It's a new generation. That means there's also a new generation of customers. There's a new generation of technology. There's a new generation of buying trends, of attitudes, of cultural and economic shifts, right? So to try to continue to run on the last generation's inertia will only carry you so far. So you really have to rebuild the engine and say, okay, how can we evolve and reimagine ourselves to be relevant for this next generation? And that's why so many, as you well know, so many of our brand redevelopment or brand revitalization efforts often come as that generational transition is happening within the organization.
And I would add that one of the important things to that is you want fresh ideas, you want new ideas, you want people who are have and understand those younger generations as well. And at the same time, the ability for them to learn from observing and being part of the organization and looking to the parents of the company as well as your own generational parents to learn from those things. In fact, I'm reminded I was talking to my son over the weekend. We were out and I had said something and done something and he looked at me and he says, "Dad, the older I get, the smarter you become." And I went, "Yeah, I get what you're saying." So I think there's that idea that if you're that smart, older generation that's authentic, that works hard, that built the business, that you're willing to share with them, but you're open to new ideas and that their stewardship of the company has that same authentic vision because it could be their younger generation years from now when they're not around. I think that's a good kind of balance, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, for sure. For
Okay.
sure.
That being said, let's look at you and think of you as two people, the Ed of today and the Ed of back in 1995 when you joined the organization. And if you were able to say, if I could talk to myself back then, what kind of advice or insight might you give yourself?
I'd probably say to my younger self, convince your dad to give you a couple of years outside of the business, go work somewhere else and come back. Probably not a realistic proposition, but I'd say at least give that a shot. Say, hey, dad, I want to come in, but I'm not ready. And at least have that conversation. Because where I think a lot of, next generation leaders benefit when they do that is they get to experience what it's like to be an employee for a while under somebody else. And aside from my summer jobs, I was really never an employee under somebody else. I was an employee under my dad. I think you gain a greater and faster appreciation for, what it's like to be a team member and not just a leader. Although many of the people I've interviewed, I came in at the lowest possible level and had to work my way up and prove myself in battle many times over, and probably was held to a higher standard than others might be because of my last name. But yeah, that I did interview one person who said he had a different view, which I thought was interesting. He said, when you know that's what you want, albeit the family business, and you know that at a young age, why wait? Start that journey as soon as you can, because the sooner you start, the better you can become, and the better leader you become faster. Very interesting perspective. However, more people that I talk to say, I really needed that outside experience first to really have a to bring that back to the organization, to be a more rounded person when I walked in that door. So
It's kind of like love. Sometimes you see somebody and the love is instant, and the other one is somebody for years, and then you finally say, yeah, I just grew into love with them. That, and sometimes one works and sometimes the other works for that. One thing I was thinking about, and we were talking about themes and trends about the 50 people that you've interviewed. What are some of the most surprising or unexpected things that they've said or you've heard? What would those be?
one of my early guests said before he made a snap decision to come into the business, and he said, I really wish I took a little time to educate myself a little more about the industry. Not just what I heard from the family, but the industry at large, the category we're in, the industries that the business served, and also what it meant to step into an organization or a family business organization. And he said there just wasn't many resources there, but I wish I took a little time to stop, think, and learn before I said yes. I thought that was an interesting perspective. And then another one, as I probed him on being at the crossroads, do I join the family business? Do I go my own path? He quizzically looked at me and said, why are you putting so much pressure on a young person? Try it. If you fail, you're what, 22, 25? So what? You try something else, but give it a try. Those are the years to give things a try. And I thought, what a refreshing perspective. I know when I made that decision, Rich, I felt like the weight of the world was on my shoulders. A lot of young people probably feel the same. And his perspective was, don't put so much pressure on yourself. You're a kid. Be a kid. Try. Fall down on your face. Get up. Think about it. Learn from it. And go on.
When, in your particular case, when you think about things like marketing and brand and all those things, it's not something that outside of the business, it's not like saying my family manufactures bicycles and I love to bicycle. So boom, there's a natural. That's a little bit of a little bit more of an esoteric or virtual way of thinking about it, but obviously that was successful for you. And here we are so many years on, and now we're looking ahead. And so let's talk a little bit now about what you've learned from the first 50 episodes and all those great people that you've talked to, and hopefully a lot of the family business members have watched and enjoyed watching, and think about what, let's say, the next 50 episodes when you get to number 100, and maybe I'm interviewing you again for number 100, but let's think a little bit about what you might be envisioning for the show evolving in the next 50 episodes, what you've learned, what maybe questions to ask, maybe industries to investigate, people to bring in, maybe even saying, can we get two people into an episode rather than one, things like that. But go ahead. I'm making suggestions, but you run the show here, so you tell me.
What's always distinct is the journey that got the guests I've interviewed to that point. There are a lot of commonalities that I've seen in 50 episodes, and time will tell if they carry forward to the next 50. But there's always seems to be a sense of tenacity, Every single one's come through some level of adversity and come out on the other end. So there's this drive that they all have, this refusal to give up. There's always respect for the family. However, not to the point of bending the business to the will or whim of the family. So there's a balanced respect for family, but there's also a very healthy respect for the business and the institution itself. I've seen tremendous respect for the personnel working within those businesses and recognizing, hey, they have families too. I've seen different models and configurations where sometimes the family member will be the leader, and sometimes the family member will step aside and let someone else lead and play a role in a board position or something along those lines. A lot of the businesses that I've interviewed, similar to my journey, you start from the bottom. One that I spoke with, he said, the first thing you do when you join the business is you paint the building. And I said, what if the building didn't need a fresh coat of paint? He goes, it doesn't matter. That's what you do.
Yes.
You paint the building. Another gentleman I interviewed, he said it was a steel business and he worked out in the steel yard. Doesn't matter your college degree, doesn't matter how smart you are. That's what you do. You're going to start. So there was a lot of from the ground up, but it did a lot of things for these leaders. It gave them a 360 perspective on the business and all facets of it. It also allowed them to, in their own right, earn the respect of their teammates. Hey, this is not just son or daughter stepping into a role because they share a last name. No, they worked alongside us. They were there late nights with us. They were there early mornings. They were sweating out, will a delivery make it on time? They were shoulder to shoulder with the team. So they had the bandwidth and opportunity to earn respect on their own merit and not because of who their father or mother was. Those are some themes that I'll certainly be looking for in future episodes. And typically, I'll always ask a question around the influence of technology in this particular case, in this time frame. AI seems to be proliferating every industry, and heard some really interesting applications and endeavors using the current technology to better the business.
Yeah, AI is just a quantum leap when you think about Gen Z and the new one, Gen A, as we call them. It just that is going to be an amazing difference. And who knows what you can ask them and what we'll find out what episode 99 will be like. But for hopefully for the folks that have joined us today and for these listeners that want to connect with you, maybe to be part of the Growing Up B2B audience for an interview or even to talk brand with you, have a conversation about that. What's the best way for them to get in contact with you, Ed?
So you can always find us at DeliaNet, DeliaNet.com, or look me up on LinkedIn at Ed Delia. And you'll not just find us, you'll find Delia Associates, you'll find information on Growing Up B2B, our podcast. And if you're out there and you're listening and you've got a great story to share about being part of a B2B family business, we'd love to speak with you.
That's great. Ed, now I get a chance from my side of the screen to say thank you for being on the other side of the microphone today and congratulations on 50 episodes of Growing Up B2B. Conversations that you've led have really helped many family business leaders have a voice. And for them, it's probably been an opportunity for them to learn things about themselves and maybe they didn't before they talked to you. So even for you, it's been great to hear your perspective as both a host and a second generation business leader. And to our listeners, thank you for being part of this journey. Here's to the next 50 episodes. I'm Rich Palatini, and this has been Growing Up B2B. We'll see you for episode 51.
Thank you, Rich. Thank you so
You're
much.
welcome, Ed. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to turn the tables on you. Take
All
care.
right, take care. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed Delia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.